Hello, welcome to the Nehajatuan podcast. This is Isaac. This is episode 12. In this episode, Jess and I discuss when I trained Ueja Sancho with Bruce. And we also begin discussing specific energy gates and dissolving them. Specifically, we spent some time on dissolving the brain. And stick around after the podcast. There's an excerpt of an interview we did with Eric Peters, which is available on our Patreon account. So if you like what you hear, you can go there and subscribe. Also, Jess has his Bagua walking program going on there as well. So if you're interested in Bagua, this is a pretty good introduction as well. If you've already done Bagua, it's just a good workout to practice along with. Okay, hope you enjoy the episode and take care.
Welcome back to the Nehajatuan podcast with Jess and Isaac, talking about opening the energy gates of your body by BK Francis. And we covered some of the other martial arts that he trained during his time there in Taiwan and Hong Kong and Japan. And after we talked about the Eight Drunken Immortals, that brought up another class he taught in Fairfax back in the 90s, which was called Ueja Sancho or Ueja Chuan or a couple of different names. And that's something that hasn't appeared in his books much or his other teachings. Do you remember what he said about Ueja?
As he put it, what we were learning was the Yue Fei's family art. And he had said he'd learned it from Leo's son. And this was, I think he had just been back. I think it was the scattering of Leo's ashes or something like that. And he went back there and, you know, did some sort of ceremony and then came back. And while he was there, he'd learned some stuff from Leo's kid. And that's what he said the origin of it was. And the techniques were very simple, sort of one movement techniques. If you sort of think of like a brush knee type of thing, that was the first one. There were ones that were more of like a arc kind of a punch or like a chop with fist kind of a movement if you're gonna know Tai Chi.
So those were more like single movement exercises rather than extended long forms.
Yeah, the way I would sort of put it, it was like Tai Chi like movements done like Xing Yi. So done in a line, but done, you know, a lot more front weighted postures, things like that. And then most of it was technique, you know, it was like you did a simple movement and then it was about how to like use that movement as a point to expand upon, you know, to improvise from. So you'd start with that and then it was like, oh, you could do this one or that one. So you kind of had these modular pieces that you could put together, you know, they're all very simple, but like you could do a big circle one way and then, you know, turn it into a hammer fist or, you know, one or the other. And there was a lot of emphasis on stepping, like doing
same stepping of Xing Yi. Maybe
it was simpler. It didn't have like the seven star stuff. It was all very straight, like, or to the side, like 90 degrees to the side. But what it had was this idea that every time you moved, there was a step, and for every punch or for every step, there could be multiple punches, right? So you could step once and maybe hit three or four times. And that kind of reminiscent of Bung Chun in a sense.
So when I'm looking at your old notes here from 1998, it says here, Yue Jia Chun, Yue family fighting flow. And that sounds like what you were saying, that Yue Fei is the famous Chinese general from antiquity who was a notorious strategist and leader who eventually was betrayed by his own troops, but number of martial arts in China and go back to him,
claim him as the founder, yeah, including Xing Yi, right? So
right, but this sounds like this was his family's form that he used to maybe create Xing Yi down the line.
I mean, who knows, you know, it's
a long time ago.
Foundational myths are, you know, a big thing, so you gotta
just, they're important.
They're like part, Yeah, I mean, it's part of the story.
Doesn't mean you have to believe it, you know.
There's no real way to verify it, so you can just kind of take it with a grain of salt.
So the first thing you've got listed here is release bound energy, forget the form.
Sounds about right.
So releasing bound energy, I mean, that's a lot like Qigong, where you're trying to, you know, if something's bound within you, you're letting it go. But maybe this is like release it at somebody.
Well, what he said was it was the... So it's like, if you think about doing martial arts forms versus fighting, right? There's something that has to happen, and there's this sort of, that's where the free hand thing comes into it. So it was the idea about how to take what you knew in terms of structure and forms and then make that loose and able to improvise and flow with it, right? So you know, the fighting flow part was the big emphasis, and he said it was similar to like what he learned from Hung Yi Shan, not in forms but in terms of what it accomplished. He said it was similar to like the Shaolin stuff that he learned from Hung Yi Shan, you know, that sort of
internal external sort of transition, yeah, type of fighting.
I mean, just, you know, classic, it's sort of just classic Chinese martial arts, you know, get on your front leg and throw a couple punches and then do a chop and step and then do a couple more, you know, and just real kind of simple, but stuff you need that if you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna use Chinese martial arts as a martial art, these kind of things are, you know, these sort of basic fundamental things just kind of need to go through them at some point. And this had a bit more of an, you know, an internal focus, you know, so he still talked a lot about using your shoulder blades and, you know,
right,
releasing inside.
I'm seeing here he says the next one says pull down by dropping the body, not by using the arms. Use body mechanics, not force. So that's that internal side of it,
right,
that you're bringing up.
I mean, that's basically the same as Xing Yi, right? I mean,
so you're not striking with the arms alone, you're dropping your body to create force and stepping.
Well, right, so stepping creates a forward power, dropping creates an up and down power, right? And turning your hips creates a side to side thing. And so it was really about creating a spring. So, you know, this idea of loading up and then releasing what you have stored, rather than trying to create a power from just, you know, using your own strength.
And that's the next note you have on here is springiness of the body. Get close to take the person down and spring back to attack. Oh, to take the person down, meaning you press into him, then you spring back to attack.
Yeah, this was
take the person's force.
The classic, you know, sort of you pull the person's arm down as they're falling into it, you spring back and hit them in the face.
So you take the person's force into your legs, not your upper body.
Yeah, you just use your arm. Your arm is kind of a, you know, an anchor or, you know, something, and you use that to hold on to the person, but it doesn't create the power for it.
Right. That's good stuff for sure. Just continuing to look forward at the notes you were taking. There's definitely some interesting stuff in here. When doing Xing Yi, your mindset should be to take up the other person's space. It, quotations, how dare you challenge me, you cockroach? That sounds like a classic Xing Yi type of statement.
The full thing was, what was it? It was like, you know, the idea that it was a military thing and you were a military person and somebody had offended the emperor, and, you know, your attitude towards someone who's offended the emperor is that they're a fucking cockroach that needs to be dealt with. And so there was no, you know, there was no compassion, really. It wasn't about, you know, don't hurt them because it might be bad for your karma or anything. Like, it was just, now there's a bug. You need to kill the bug because, you know, the guy in charge doesn't like it. Right. So it had that very, you know, military kind of feeling to it. It's good. It was a nice counter to the Eight Drunken Immortals, because the Eight Drunken Immortals was the same kind of flow thing, but in a much looser kind of gushier way, and this was more, you know, how you would actually take it to a street fight, you know?
Totally.
You know, so that's what it felt like to me, was a lot of what we were getting was wrapped up inside of this UHS stuff that was just some basic, you know, Bruce's basic ideas on, you know, how to kick the shit out of somebody.
Basically.
Like, you know, because it was, the techniques were really simple, but it was the stuff about timing and about when to, you know, do the return and, you know, all this kind of stuff that we spent a lot of time on.
This is pretty cool. Here it says you work on the flexibility of the elbows. Block with your forearm, then rotate the elbow around the point of contact to strike high or low. Don't analyze your movement while you're doing it. Wait till you finish.
Yeah, that was another
real shingy sounding right there.
Yeah, that was kind of the, if you think of like turn and chop with fist from Tai Chi, right? The idea that you have your elbow is a still point and your hand is an elbow or pivoting in a circle. And so there was a lot of stuff about how as you start to go in one direction, you can pivot on that elbow and, you know, change the angles and things like that. It was,
and you don't analyze your movement. Do you remember what he meant by that? Like, don't get stuck looking at it, but something like that, or?
Well, the thing he said was, you know, the minute you start to analyze it, whether it's good or bad, you know, the idea that the minute you think, oh, I got him, you get hit in the face, you know? So, because it's that thing of, if you're analyzing what you did, you know, half a second ago, you're not seeing what's actually right there in front of you. Now you're kind of, you know, you're gapping out, you're somewhere else, you know? So the thing was, you know, analyze it after you get off the floor.
And that's that shingy mentality of not letting, you know, fantasies or expectations or memories or worries get in the way. You just do the job, you stomp on the cockroach, and then think about it.
Yeah, and it was, you know, again, that military mindset of just, you know, there's a job that needs to be done and you do it, and, you know, you don't question whether or not it was the right thing to do until maybe, you know, it's finished.
So the next looks like a couple classes later. Waiting. If there is no hole, don't attack. Just block until there is one. Block once, block twice, then they gap out, then you attack without winding up. So that brings up the idea of gaps again.
Right. So that one was that there's this idea, there's space, right, between a punch and the contact. So when, you know, you're not moving necessarily in space, but there's this sense of waiting for something to come to you to move, right? So you don't rush forward into the person's attack. You wait, you know, this half a millisecond to get a little bit of space, and then that's the, you know, the where the gap is. And, you know, this is the stuff I think that, you know, it has to kind of be like, as you would say, beat into you to really get a sense of it, because it's just like there's a certain rhythm, but it's not like a set pattern, but there's a feeling you get for when it's time to move into that gap. And, you know, it just sort of, you know, you do it a bunch of times and you get hit in the face, and, you know,
right when you walk into it, you get punched in the face and there wasn't a gap.
Right. I mean, so you know, that's where you just learn by trial and error, and, you know.
So you said, it mentions here without winding up, and that's another shingy concept where you use your stepping to close the gap rather than reaching out with your arm.
Yeah. One of the big themes was the idea that didn't matter where your hand was, you could issue power from that point and then move, as opposed to having to move to issue power. Right. So the punch could come from contact, essentially. You didn't have to pull back and do it again.
So it says here, the punch. This punch is done in an arc. The shoulder leads. First, the punch goes away from the spine, then towards the center, always rounding. You use the spring so the hand doesn't stop between attacks.
Right. So that's sort of, it goes from your fist goes from your left shoulder, your right fist goes from your left shoulder to your right shoulder, kind of an arc. Usually that was the hitting with the sort of hammer fist across the someone's temple or something like that. As we dubbed it, the BKS special, where you're coming in with the elbow first. So the person's instinct is to block the elbow. And then when they block the elbow, this sort of hammer fist thing comes swinging around the back and hits you in the back of the head. It's a classic.
That's a classic. So another piece of advice: don't get stuck into one action, attack or defense. Let the other person's action determine what you do.
Right. That's.
But yet, it's not passive. I can only imagine.
Well, but that's that waiting thing of, you know, you're not doing anything. I mean, you're not frozen, but you're just in this sort of suspended animation for a split second until there's a clear path. And I think, you know, that also is very Shingy, you know, reminiscent that, you know, you don't just move into nothing. You move when there's a, you know, if there's no, you know, I think the quote he used to give us from Wong Xu Jing was something like, you only hit a defenseless person, right? Mm. That if the person has any ability to defend themselves, you just wait. And when then, you know, you do another thing and you do another thing until you've got them tied up to the point that they can't do anything. And then that's when you hit them because, you know, this idea that, or, you know, that there has to be a clear angle for your attack, but otherwise, you know, just wait. And I've always felt that stuff was very much the way Wong Xu Jing's fighting method was sort of similar to that.
Where you're not trying to think of what attack to use. You're just waiting for a gap to develop and then you enter it and let your instinct kind of take over.
Yeah, and then once there's a gap, you just swing your arms like, you know, big meat hammers and just, you know, smash whatever's smash whatever's in front of you, you know.
So, okay, a couple more things here. Yue Jia, stepping. Take a step, punch three times. From the back leg, then the front leg, then 50-50, both stepping forward and back. So that sounds like that form you were talking about, you step and punch.
Well, this is a little bit more. This is you step, you're on your back leg, you punch three times in the middle, you punch three times on the front leg, then you step again. So there's nine punches for each step.
Nice. It says here that, as a person attacks, take one step back and attack forward, always projecting forward. Use for when your back is to a wall or the person is too strong for you to take head on, retreating to gain tactical advantage.
Yeah, this is another one of those things that's very much a Shingy, you know, thing about you can be moving backwards and still, you know, issuing power forwards. So the step back is just simply to create a little bit more space for that gap, right? For them to fall into that gap before you come forward.
So this is if your back's to the wall, you sort of just switch your feet. You don't necessarily go backwards very far.
Yeah, if your back's to the wall, then you'd be sort of withdrawing in with one, you know, half of your body and then coming forward with the other half.
And part of you is always projecting forward. So you may be stepping backwards, but your mind, your intent, your energy is headed forwards the whole time, engaging.
Yeah.
That's good advice for sure.
I mean, the way he used to describe that one was, you know, sort of like the classic thing, you know, is that I'm a monkey jumping backwards or whatever. But he used to describe it as you're falling back or stepping backwards or riding on a horse backwards and shooting an arrow. Right, that you might be going, you know, one direction, but that arrow is still going to shoot out, you know, whatever direction you point it, right? So you could be backing up and shooting that arrow, it's still going to go where you were originally pointing, right?
And it looks like from there the notes become Xingyi and it moves on to Bung Chuan. And it's interesting because some of the other notes in the same notebook on each page are the Tai Chi, Wu style Tai Chi third, and Bagua eighth palm change are all mixed in with your notes.
Those were the three classes that for that whatever, you know, couple of years that he taught in that place was.
So he's doing 3 1-hour classes in a row.
It started At that point, it was once a week. So when I first started, it was 2 days a week, for 3 hours each day. Then it was once a week for 3 hours. And I think by the time you came, it was once a week, and it was like 2 1-hour, 1.5-hour classes or something like that.
I think they were 1 hour and 15 or something like that. Yeah. They were a little more than an hour. So it was 2.5 hours, something like that.
So the classes got a little bit longer, but there were only two of them and it was once a week. Mm-hmm. So like, I think by that point it was sort of the 2 hours once a week. 3 hours once a week.
So now we come to the section of chapter 4 called the important major and minor gates of the body. When you actually practice the dissolving process, you do not work your way skipping from point to point, energy gate to energy gate, as presented in this book. Rather, you dissolve downward from the top to the bottom of your body, front, back, and side simultaneously. So he's saying that, you know, we're going to define each of the points one by one. But when you dissolve, it's more like a liquid flow that's continuously moving through the whole thing at once, rather than jumping from spot to spot.
Yeah, it's the way it's described as a sheet of water, right? So as a sheet of water goes down, there are spots you want to pay attention to, but the sheet of water is, you know, going to hit everything. And so, you know, in the beginning, you do one point, then another point, you know, even if you do them separately, even if they're on the same plane, you know, same horizontal plane. But, you know, later as you get better at, you know, just holding your attention, you can be dissolving your elbows, your solar plexus, your liver, you know, everything that's in that, like on that line, all at the same time. It's just, you know, to hold on one piece, it's a little easier if you do them one at a time. So, you know,
that's sort of like the idea of breaking it up and then combining it again. So you're going to work on these individual points one by one, and then flow them together, then work on them individually, then flow them together, sort of back and forth in your learning process.
Right. I mean, it's like you can ultimately, I don't, you know, in the beginning, I think it doesn't matter so much, you know, even if you miss a few points, you know, as long as you're just getting the basic thing of it going down. You know, as you get more advanced and you want to do more specific stuff, you know, that's where you want to zoom in on these points. And so, you know, it's important to remember he talks about dissolving first as a general practice, but then he talks about the gates, right? So the assumption is you at least have a general sense of what dissolving is, just as a, you know, concept, right? Before you try to apply it to anything like an energy gate, right? So, because you might not even have that ability yet.
So he touches on something pretty interesting here. When you're talking about that sort of that water descending, he says that this descending water is the best defense against burnout from the ascending energy or fire that emanates from the ground. So that's his idea, that water descends from heaven above, but fire rises from the earth below. So it's a very heaven and earth yin-yang dichotomy there.
Right. I mean, that's the sort of classic, you know, there's heaven, there's earth, and then man is the sort of conduit between them, right? And Qigong is about improving that conduit, you know, getting that flow between heaven and earth to move better.
And that also reflects the nature of the opening the energy gate sets, which is focused on, it's the water set. It focuses on this descending downward releasing, whereas the spiraling energy body set focuses on the rising, lifting, sort of flickering energy of fire.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think, you know, most of that is safety precaution at first. But the practical sort of procedural part of it, you know, that what you're doing on the way down is you're clearing space, right? You're, you know, it's, if you sort of dissect the name, you're opening these energy gates, right? You're making it so that these major centers in your body don't get stuck, right? So you're, you know, you can think of it as it's a pipe, right? And you're just blasting a bunch of water through the pipe to clear the pipe. And then once the pipe is clear, there's going to be this natural rising coming back up the pipe because it's now got a flow. And that's where, you know, the idea that you don't really start doing anything where it goes up until you can go down pretty well. You know, this is the thing I talked about, you know, you got the fire extinguisher, right? That once once you've got your, you know, bucket with a string on it, you know, that at any moment you can just pull that string and whoosh, you know, a big wave of dissolving comes down and just chills everything out. It's kind of dangerous to start bringing stuff up because, you know, it can come up and you can't do anything about it. And, you know, that's, you know, you can read all the stuff, you know, about what happens to people when they go through what they call Kundalini psychosis and stuff like that, you know. Brain break.
Where the pipes are too clogged and then you start rising up and pressurizing everything.
Right. So there's that downward pressure causes an upward rising. If that upward rising is too much for your physical body or anybody, it causes a destabilization, you know. And so the dissolving practice is the, you know, the sort of constant flushing of everything to keep it stable and calm, you know.
And maybe in the long run, you're kind of doing both at once. You've got this descending sense built in, and then at the same time, you're working with rising energy. You're still got some part of you is dissolving and relaxing downward the whole time.
Yes. I'm not going to talk about what those things are because I think that's a little bit beyond the scope of energy gates. But let's just say there are things where you are doing up and down, in and out, you know, inner dissolving, outer dissolving, all at the same time. But, you know, that's sort of like, you know, this is walking and chewing gum. That's driving a car and playing video games. You know, it's like, that's where there's
it takes a lot of attention. Yeah,
it takes a lot of attention, and there is a great risk to doing it if you are not really good at it, right? So if you don't know how to drive real fucking well with your eyes closed, don't try it, you know. And it's kind of that, you know, like, I don't know, I mean, so there's a you know, a safety precaution there. But yes, there are many forms of and ways you dissolve that, you know, involve multiple dimensions, if you will.
And it all starts with this initial external dissolving process where you're releasing outward away from yourself and dispersing energy that's been stuck.
Yeah, I mean, on one level, that's, you know, let's see. What I will say is you can dissolve a lot more than just what's inside of your physical body, right? Mm-hmm. And that when you start dissolving things on deeper levels, some crazy shit can start to happen, you know? And most of it's just when you start waking up these sort of subtle energies, you experience the world in a way that's a little bit different than what we would call normal, right? And you might become aware of things in yourself and in other people and in the world around you that you weren't aware of. And, you know, that's sort of this double-edged sword of, you know, too much awareness can sometimes, you know, be unpleasant. And so the dissolving kind of keeps you in check. It keeps you from going too far down any one path, you know, without that safety net, you know. And I think that was the genius of the way Bruce presented this stuff or presents this stuff, is that you put that in first, you know. So before you start doing microcosmic orbits and, you know, astral projections and all the other cool shit that you end up doing when you do this stuff for a long enough time, it's always grounded in this ability to just be right back in your body and be grounded, you know, and to not have to worry about that part.
And that seems like the most valuable lesson of all, you know. I mean, if you want to go off and do other stuff, that's one thing, but everyone needs grounding. Everyone needs stable, you know, awareness of self, you know, no matter if you're doing internal alchemy or what, you know, that's something that's an invaluable skill that, that everyone. Yeah.
I don't know the number of sets that Bruce learned, but I know it was probably over 30, you know, in terms of Qigong sets that he was exposed to while he was training. And
definitely,
you know, he always said the reason he chose this one as the main one is not because it's the quote unquote best, but it's because it's the quote unquote safest.
Safest.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And that safety was, you know, a higher priority than getting there fast. And I think that that's kind of the signature thing of the, you know, what he calls the water tradition. You know, because that's the 70% rule, you know, that's the don't push yourself. That's the stay comfortable. That's the don't go beyond what you're capable of. All these things that are just kind of repeated in different ways, hold to that one principle that, you know, hurting yourself is not worth it.
So as we begin looking at the gates of the body here, we start with the head and the neck. And this is pretty interesting because he starts off talking about there's a very specific methodology for brain Qigong, and it is not a subject for beginners. It should only be studied under the direct supervision of a master. Connected configurations can enhance the latent powers of the mind. It takes a master with the appropriate knowledge to guide one in this practice.
Yeah, I did a seminar about a year and a half in with Bruce where he started to do some of that. And that was the first time I sort of had that experience of, I'm just going to go sit this one out, you know, and just kind of went on the sidelines and, you know, I don't need to do that. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that speaks to what you were saying about, there's a lot of great things you can do with the brain, but you do want to start slow. So he suggests that you don't dissolve very deep into your head. You start on within an inch or so of the skull, you dissolve at each of the different points he calls out here.
Right.
And says that you don't want to practice dissolving points inside the brain. It's just right around the periphery of it.
Yeah, the most of the gates that he mentions are, you know, no more than even in the torso, they aren't more than a couple, you know, maybe an inch deep or something. So yeah.
So just to wrap up this section. He says here that after a month or two of practice, it is permissible to dissolve the entire brain at once, but he doesn't want you going in there and dissolving little spots within it specifically, because that has the potential to set off, you know, an individual part of your brain. But dissolving it as a big chunk all at once is, you know, that seems reasonable.
Yeah. The way I sort of took it was you can dissolve the meat of the brain, but don't mess with the little lights that pop up inside of it, right? That if you start getting things that light up inside of your brain, don't try to do anything with them. Just
don't pour gasoline on those little spots. Yeah, you know?
Just, you can observe it and be like, oh, that's a thing, but don't, you know, don't think that the way he described it was, you know, if you can think you could, you know, open up someone's brain and actually do brain surgery, you know, all right, go ahead. But, you know, if you don't have that level of detail, it's like, you know, that would be the equivalent of just cracking someone's head open with a hammer and starting to just like dig around with a spoon. You know? So
you might be able to do it, but you don't want to do it.
You might get lucky, but you might also, you know, mess yourself up. So, it's, you know, again, it's the possible reward or benefit from it is just not worth the risk. And I think that, you know, that's the big sort of, you know, message there is just, you know, the little you might get from messing around with this stuff at this point is not worth the potential, you know, damage it could cause you.
There's plenty of time down the road.
Yeah. It'll come when it's time, you know, and that's kind of how this stuff works is, you know, you don't push it and it'll, if you don't push it, it'll come faster than if you, you know, try to force it to happen quickly. So just, you know, take your time and it'll, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll be, you know, that's, yeah. All right.
All right, brother. Good talking with you.
All right. Cheers.
See you next time.
Hey folks, this is Isaac again. Here's our little clip of our interview with Eric Peters. He talks about training with Bruce in the 80s and a whole bunch of other stuff. I hope you enjoy it.
So I walked up and I look, and there's my first exposure to the Neja Institute, which was Bruce's school. And there's a little flyer, and I'm reading the flyer, and the flyer in the back of it says that he studied with Wang Xuqin and Hung Yisheng in Taiwan. And I was like, oh my God, this guy must really know something, because I knew who they were. So they, and it turned out, you may remember Larry Herbert, but Larry was sitting there all dressed up in a nice looking shirt, talking to people. And another woman, Nikki, who was one of his old students, was there. And they said, oh, he's going to give a demonstration this afternoon over in some other part of the grounds. So I went home and came back that afternoon. And there he was with, you know, 20 or 30 students in his brown Taoist robes that he, you know, if you've seen that old Xing Yi video of him.
Yep.
And then he had Mike McConnell and Dave Hoots and some of the other Xing Yi boys do some Xing Yi, and he explained what Xing Yi was. And then he said, I'm going to demonstrate something called Eight Drunken Immortals. And I'm not even sure I'd ever heard of it then. But
nice.
So he starts out on the grass. He starts, you know, and these guys are going after Kumar, trying to hit him, trying to do something. And he's doing the old tipping the jug back and blocking them. And then he's rolling around on the ground, tripping them up just beautifully. And I just watched this fascinated, going, I have no idea what he's doing. But yeah. He certainly knows what he's doing.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. And if you want to hear the rest of it, you can subscribe to our Patreon. There's links in the description and on our website. Okay. Like and subscribe and take care. Thanks.